And Indian culture, that's not important.
Yeah. If
Indian says 8 minutes, meaning 1 minute, he means about 10 minutes. If he says 5 minutes, he means at least 1 hour. So it's all very relative, you know. In China, it's quite strict, you know.
Yeah.
It begins at 1:30. They're quite strict. It's also in Japan. They even call it Japanese time.
Yeah.
When they have an appointment at 1:30 and they arrive at 1:20, they will stand outside the door.
Yeah.
Wait till it's 1:30, then ring the bell.
Yeah. It's Japanese time.
It's very strict. Very strict. It's the opposite of India. I always wonder, how can Indians and Japanese get along, you know? It's so completely different mentality, you know? Completely yeah. different. But anyway, they're all Buddhists, so that's okay. That's okay. We were talking about this this thing. And, of course, we all know the tradition about the Sangeetis. I've mentioned, we all know the tradition about the Sangeetis. One, two, three. Number one is mentioned by everyone, actually. All Nikayas mentioned Sangeeti number one in Rajagriha, or not in Rajagriha, on Mount Gurdrakuta. The number one mentioned by every tradition. Number two, many scholars have long doubted whether this was a real Sangeeti, because maybe not all monks participated, maybe who was presiding, different traditions have different accounts. So, but I think right now the general agreement about this by all monks, whatever Nikaya, there was this Vaishavi. This is true, this happened, really happened. It is mentioned in Theravada tradition. It is mentioned in Mahasangika tradition, as preserved in Chinese translation, but it is Mahasangika tradition. So everybody agrees, no Sangha Veda. And number three, only Theravada, you know? Only Theravada. Why? If this is so important for the split between Saviravada and Mahasangika, why only Theravada mentions this? We would expect Mahasangika also to mention this. After all, they were the majority, you know. They were the winners. Most of them were Mahasangikas. So why don't they mention this? This is, right now, many people have started looking at other traditions besides Theravada, mostly preserved in Chinese translation, actually, because not much Sanskrit material left, and Pali always says the same thing, of course. Pali tradition is very pure, very strict, very reliable, you know, but it is one tradition. So maybe historical truth, it may be a little bit different, could be, not necessarily, but could be. So then we, last few years, people also started, well, already 10 years, started looking at one Chinese Mahasangika text, which gives the history of Sangha Veda. It's a 5th century South Chinese text, translated from, it's a Mahasangika text, and it mentions that the split, Sangha Veda, occurred in Pataliputra, in Patna, yes, but not during Ashoka, but before Ashoka. Because in Ashoka's time, only Staviras participated in the Sangeeti. Only Staviras, no Mahasangikas, joined the meeting. They had already left. And so they had left, they say, after Vaishali, before Ashoka's meeting, in between somewhere. And this Mahasangika text explains this. So before Ashoka, before the Mauryas, we have the Nanda kings in Pataliputra, in Patna. It's probably during the Nanda kings that this happened. And why did it happen? The first Sangha Bheda between Stavira. As I said yesterday, the term Stavira Vada in Sanskrit, we do not find it in ancient literature. We find Mahasangika. We do not find Stavira-vada, we find Theravada. And if you translate Theravada to Sanskrit, it is Stavira-vada. Yes. But the Staviras do not use the word. The Theravada use Theravada. And as I said yesterday, or the day before yesterday, I forget. Theravada in the sources has two meanings. It has the really Mahavihara kind of tradition, that's Theravada. We all know that. But Theravada is also mentioned for Staviravada, as opposed to Mahasangika. Mahishasakas are also Theravada, Staviravada. Sarvastivadins are also Staviravada. Theravada in Pali, if you want to say it in Pali. So the Theravada has two meanings. One is the strict meaning of the Theravada tradition, Mahavihara tradition. That's, we all agree, this meaning, and this is very important, but it also has a more general meaning of the Sanskrit Staviravada, all Staviras, not limited to Theravada strictly. They're all Staviras, they're all Theras. So Theravada has those two meanings now, that people have looked it up in historical literature and all that, and actually I myself only found out last week when I went to the library and looked at an article of a book published last year, and I believe what the author says is true. So this Staviravada Mahasangika split happened probably during the Nanda kings, before Maurya in Pataliputra. And the Nanda kings, of course, the history of the Nanda kings is not very clear. This is India. As I said, Indians are not very precise, you know. For China, for Europe, for Japan, we know exactly where, what, when, even in which room it happened, and who said what. We it is as if we have always have a good report of some secretary writing down the things. Yeah. But in India, that's never the case. Never the case. So we know there were Nanda kings, and we have some general ideas, but exactly what year, as I already said, before, the first really exact date of Indian history is when the Greek Alexander was in the northwest. And then we have to count back to Ashoka, count back to the death of the Buddha, you see. So we have to start with something reliable, which is 317, something like that, when Alexander was up there in the Gandharan area. And then we have to count back to Ashoka. We have to go back to the Buddha's death. You know, so this so the Nandas are before Ashoka. We know that, but exactly what year? That's difficult to know. Very difficult to know. But we guess must be end of the 4th century BC, about 300 and a little bit more BC. 300 and a little bit more, maybe. Maximum 330, maybe. We don't know. It's end of the 4th century BC in Pataliputra. It probably happened. And only Sangha Bheda if you have a Vinaya dispute. This we should also, you should know very well. In India, only Vinaya can cause Sangha Bheda. Only Vinaya. In East Asia, no problem. Everybody has the same Vinaya. In China, everybody has Dharmaguptaka Vinaya. Japan, same thing. Everybody Dharmaguptaka Vinaya. Sometimes they add a few rules, but always basically same thing. Everybody agrees on Dharmaguptaka Vinaya, and some schools may add something more, like the Zen school may add a rule that you have to work for your living, that you have to work. That's an addition. The Mitong esoteric, the tantrics, may add a rule saying that there is this abhisheka, which is given by some acharya. This could be one additional rule in the Vinaya, in their Vinaya. But they all, anyway, they all have Dharmaguptaka Vinaya. always like that, or just one. But in India, the Sangha Veda is difference about Vinaya, get another Nikaya. So what was the difference at that time? We know what the Theravada say. The Theravada tradition says it's Mahadeva, yes, who was at the basis of the split. He had five views which were discussed, and no, people did not agree generally. But Mahadeva, in the history of Buddhism, we have two Mahadevas. Theravada has this one, which supposedly caused the split, but there's another one in Andhra, in the south, who caused the split within the Mahasanghikas, near Amaravati, near Thanyakataka, in Dharanikot, or Thanyakataka, in the south, which is Amaravati. So this is that's the second Mahadeva. So, but maybe there was just this one, you know, in the south. It's possible that there was only this one Mahadeva in the south causing a split, further split of Mahasanghikas. But in the north, in Pataliputra, there was no Mahadeva. There was a discussion among the monks. The monks agreed to unite after Vaishali, but discussion did not stop. The discussion continued. And so the discussion maybe became very lively. Many, many groups have different ideas. I think mainly two ideas, mainly two groups. But within each group you had even people disagreeing, this and that, but the main two groups, I think, are the Stavidas, the traditional ones, who say all dharmas exist. The traditional ones who say prajna is dharma pravinchaya. When you know all the dharmas, you have prajna. Maybe they had explanations. There was no text written yet, but anyway, they had spoken sutta, spoken texts, and spoken shastras. Maybe the plan of their texts was the Four Noble Truths, and they wanted to be arhat. You see, that is one general group. The other group probably had other ideas. They're saying, oh, dharmas do not exist. Everything empty. So if you have no dharma, what about prajna, you know? Because prajna means you know all the dharmas, but if there are no dharmas, so there's nothing left to know for prajna anymore. So prajna should have another meaning. Prajna then becomes understanding emptiness of dharmas. It's a different prajna. So they were discussing those things. And the other group also, their texts, their explanations, was not based on Four Noble Truths. We will read some Abhidharma Hridaya later, and you will see the plan of Abhidharma Hridaya, which is Stavira, is Four Noble Truths. But the other group did not base their explanations on Four Noble Truths, but on six paramitas. Six paramitas, especially prajna paramita. Paramita. Recently I got the idea that maybe in old texts it was called parami. Of course, you are Pali scholars, you immediately say parami, of course, yes? But paramita, they say this is the Sanskrit word, yes? But if you look at the old Chinese translations, Kumarajiva, the Yuloka Kshema Kumarajiva, the old ones, before 400 AD, the Chinese translations never add this ta, also parami. Kumarajiva says polomi. And you cannot, if it was parami ta, this ta is very long and very clear. So you cannot leave it. If it was there, you cannot just ignore it. If it is short, you can leave it. But long ta, you cannot leave out. So probably was not there. That's why Kumarajiva and people before him just said parami, basically. But we later scholars, usually basing ourselves on 7th century Xuanzang, Xuanzang says paramita in the 7th century. And this is the new terminology. So most scholars, even in China, started saying paramita. But if you look closely at the words used in Kumara Jiva and beforehand, it does not say paramita, it means parami. We're not even sure whether it's long or short. We don't know this. But anyway, the ta is not there. So they're basic explanations on the six paramis, paramitas, whatever you want, right? Parami before Kumara Jiva, paramita after Kumara Jiva. So especially Prajna Paramita. And they do not want to be arhat. Some monks thought, well, arhat is not big, it's not high enough. Arhat is not good enough. They want to be Buddha. They want to have full enlightenment. They want to have complete bodhi. That's what you want. You do not want to be arhat. Arhat is not good enough. You eat more. You want to become a Buddha. That's what a group of monks probably wanted. So you see, you have different opinions, mainly those two groups. One group saying that dharmas exist, basing explanations on Four Noble Truths. Prajna is knowing all the dharmas. They want to become arhat. That's one important group. Another group, a large group apparently, says dharmas all empty. So wisdom, prajna means understanding this emptiness, and they do not want to become arhat but Buddha, and they base their explanations on the paramitas, paramis in the old days, especially prajna paramita, you see, and prajna means insight into emptiness. So there are those two main groups within the Sangha, and they were discussing people who were saying all the dharmas exists. Then the next question, how many? And when do they exist? And things like that, all those questions come up. And there, I'm sure there were different opinions about that at the beginning. But nevertheless, they belong to one group. And the other group says emptiness. And the Sthaviras, the Sthavira, are the leaders of the Sangha. Yes, they are the ones who have at least 10 years of full ordination, Upasampada. They are a bit older normally, depends on when you join the Sangha, of course. But they usually are a bit older. They are the wise leaders of the Sangha. They saw this happening, and they were afraid that there would be some serious split if people kept discussing like this. So they add a few minor rules, few small rules to the Vinaya, to make the Vinaya a little bit more strict, to keep the Sangha together. But the majority, most monks, did not agree. And the result of the good intention of the Stavira was a split in reality. And in that case, if there is a Vinaya discussion, you have a Sangha Bheda. So probably the first Sangha Bheda happened like that, before Ashoka. Of course, we do not know for sure. There is no text. There is no written text of what happened in those days. We can only come to this conclusion based on what happened later. We see the later developments, and that we have some clues and hints, some information here and there, and then we can think back and say, oh, so this is probably what happened. That's how it works, you know, because we don't know, no text. And if there is a text, it's probably a text written by someone in one Nikaya who has his own purpose, idea. And another Nikaya has another idea. So anyway, if we gather all the information possible, and if we see what happened later, we come to the conclusion I just mentioned. And this is what happened. in Pataliputra during the Nandas. There is some sutra reason also for it. You know, when the Buddha was alive and he only lived 80 years old, yes? Today we celebrate the birthday of someone who lived longer than the Buddha did, yes? So the Buddha lived 80 years old during his lifetime. Of course, nothing was written down. That's something very common to all great people, you know, they never write. So we have to write books and articles, but the Buddha never wrote one word. We don't even know if he could write. It is never mentioned in one sutra the Buddha wrote down. It's not mentioned. You cannot find any sentence like that. But of course, because it's not there, we cannot say he could not write. Maybe he could, but he just didn't, you know. But there is no proof that he could write. There is he could talk, but not write. Maybe sutras don't mention it.
Okay.
You cannot find one sutra where it says Shakyamuni wrote a letter to someone or someone like that, or wrote down his talk or something like that. It does not happen. It's not there. No Nikaya ever says that. But from this argument, say that maybe he did not, he could not write, that's also not possible. Maybe
in
he
the
just
last Vistara he mentioned when he was young, he approached to the various kind of teacher around 63 or 66, and he was able to read all the knowledge of the teacher.
Okay, he could read.
Yeah.
Maybe at the time there was clear.
Well, when were the Vedas written down in India? The Veda is very old, you know. Veda is about 9th century, 10th century BC. Rig Veda is the oldest one, and Atharva Veda is very old ones. So the Vedas are the oldest texts. By the way, they have the same age as the oldest Chinese literature, the Book of Change, the Book of Odes of Poetry, is also 9th, 10th century BC. And the oldest Greek literature, Iliad and Odyssea in Europe, same age. I still remember when I went to China the first time, Chinese always say, we are ancient literature, ancient. Of course, for Americans, of course, but for Europeans, they're just as the literature, same time. For Indians, same time. 9th, 10th century BC, that's when literature starts. But maybe it was not yet written down. I don't know. When was the Veda first written down? I don't know. It was memorized, memory, and then repeated. But when was it for the first time written down? I don't know. I don't think it already during the Buddha's lifetime. It happened later, I guess. But there was writing. There was writing in the 5th century, certainly. In the 5th century, they used Kharoshthi in the Northwest. They learned from the Persians, you know, from Aramaic script. So in other areas, with other scripts, it's possible they had scripts, but I don't know what they wrote down. Anyway, the Buddha never wrote, and this is great people do not seem to write. You know, Confucius did not write down anything. His disciples did.
Yeah.
But he himself just walked around saying very wise things, and his disciples wrote down. But he himself did not write. The same for Christ. He walked around and said wise things, but he didn't write down anything. So the great wise people in world history teach, don't write. This is something in common all over the world. All over the world. Anyway, they lived in a time when writing was not that important as it is right now. You know, now we need writings. But at that time, when those people lived, and there were people, you know, Buddha walked the earth. He walked in Magadha and Madhya Desha. He went to Mathura. He did not go to the Bay of Bengal. But
he did not go to Bengal. For example, in Burma,
yes,
some people, they believe, you know, like Sri Rung,
yes,
they took a visit to Burma. But it's not,
well, that's
sure.
Good. If they believe that, then makes them better people. I fully support this.
Yeah.
If it makes them better people, it's good. I should keep doing that. But that does not mean it's the truth. You know, I always make distinction between two kinds of history. The religious history and the real history. The religious history is full of tradition and sees beliefs, and like Ashvaghosha was the teacher of Kanishka. This is religious history. Like Bodhidharma arrived in Nanjing in South China and had a discussion with the emperor.
Emperor Wu.
Saying, and the emperor was saying, well, look, I built so many temples, I support so many monks, and what do you think about the merit, about the punya? And they said, no merit at all. Now, if you say that to an emperor in the 5th century in China, you do not live.
you
cannot get to see the emperor, and you do not get a chance to say that, you know. And it's impossible. It cannot be true. And even so, you do not speak to the emperor. When you speak to an emperor, you speak to someone else, and this someone else tells the emperor. The emperor is hidden.
Yeah.
It is behind some kind of curtain.
Yeah.
So if the people who speak to the emperor, they speak to someone else, and this someone else tells the emperor. So you do not directly speak to that. This is East Asian, Chinese, Japanese also. When the Dutch were talking to the Japanese emperor, they did not just talk to him. They talked to someone else, and this someone else told the emperor. That's how it works. Not to have a confrontation. So even if the Bodhidharma said that, I'm sure the one who was supposed to tell the emperor did not say that. Probably said something else. just to be safe. So, you know, it's not true. But this is religious history. The Zen monks all believe this really happened.
Yeah.
It's a, okay, why not? So I make a distinction between religious history and what really happened. What really happened, you have to look at the dates and development, the history, and look at what other sources say and things like that. And then you have an idea of more or less what really happened. We can never prove, I already said so in the beginning. We do not work with proof, you know. If someone tells you, I prove you this and that, don't believe it. In Buddhist studies, you do not prove. You only work with probabilities, like maybe, probably, most likely, absolutely not likely, but who knows, things like that, you know. That is how Buddhist history, Buddhist science works. You cannot prove this. We do not work with proof. Actually, and those who say you work with proof also sooner or later find out it doesn't work like that. It's just like it. You only work with some information you have, and then you have a conclusion. And this conclusion is probable or not. It is probable if with this conclusion you can explain and understand many things, but someone else will give another explanation and he can explain more. This is probably more true. That's how it works, you know. So what I'm saying is the result of, well, it's a probability. And
so
more and more people.
Professor, if the Buddha, in general, with the Indian continent or places, some of the teachings, his teachings, like a pigeon, he preached devas. Is it possible to go somewhere he can find to other planet?
The devas.
No. Actually, I'm very doubtful about many things. But as you already know and must have noticed, if it is tradition and it makes you a better person, this is for me, this is good enough. It's good to do that. It's good. If it brings you to perfect rest, to peace of mind, even if it's not true, it's good. But I always ask the question, is it true, is it true, where? I ask so many questions, I always keep asking questions. Religious tradition does not ask questions, you know. Religious tradition just says, that's it, you believe it or not. But I always ask questions because I look at many traditions and I look at many cultures, and so I have questions. And I must tell you that the more I think about real history and not religious tradition, the more I like Shakyamuni, because he really was someone who faced problems in his life, gave solutions, and it works for him. As I said, it is Ratna, the precious thing number one is Buddha. Yes, it's his life, it's not his dharma. There is a reason why the Triratna has Buddha Dharma Sangha. There is a reason why it's not Sangha Dharma Buddha or whatever. There is a reason why it is Buddha number one. It's his life. And his life is practical. So we have problems. We look at the life of the Buddha. He also had problems and he solved those problems. So he's an example how to do this, you see. So if I look at it in a very practical way, he is more close to us than if you say something was very high out of our own world sphere, you know. If he belongs to us, it's easier to believe. This is my experience anyway. He had the problems we have, so he's number one. But there still is religious history, and people want heroes and want gods, and people want that. I wrote about the origin of Avalokiteshvara, origin of Manjushri, origin of Kshitigarbha, origin of Vaishajaguru, origin of all those people. They are Bodhisattvas, the Tathagatas. Theravada doesn't have them. That's good, you know, because actually, I believe there were real people who became Bodhisattvas. In China, everybody is Bodhisattva. If you are a very smart, excellent person, they can call you Bodhisattva. A good teacher is called Bodhisattva. You can call good teachers Bodhisattvas. This is a Chinese habit, and it probably also existed in the northwest of India, but not in all of India. You can even Hinayana kind of teacher, you know, you can call him Bodhisattva. It's a good Dharma Mahanaka, a good expounder of the Dharma, can be called Bodhisattva. In China, Confucius became Bodhisattva.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a temple in Beijing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist anymore, it was destroyed. But there was one temple of Bodhisattva Confucius. Confucius was a good teacher. He was teaching, his specialty is education. So he's a good teacher. So as a good teacher, you can call him Bodhisattva. This is the logic.
Even we call the older person with kind older person, we call them Bodhisattva.
Yes, mm-hmm. Someone who is a good example for us, you can call him Bodhisattva.
Yeah.
Yes. So, but not in Theravada. Theravada does not do that. Theravada knows very well what to do, what not to do. You know. But even if Theravada says so, other traditions move, continue, and develop even if Theravada says this is it, that is it, okay. Other traditions have developments which Theravada do not have. That's good, that's why Theravada is so strong today. If you move on, maybe you have problems sooner or later. It's the strong tradition has also merit, but other traditions maybe disappear, you know. Only Theravada stayed. And in the mainland of India, you do not have Sarvastivada anymore. You do not have Dharmaguptaka or Mahishasaka anymore. You do not have all that anymore. So there must be some, Theravada must do something right. Because they still continue. But I'm not going into that. It's not Abhidharma. Not Abhidharma, because as I say, Theravada has Buddha Bhashita Abhidharma in the south, but the Buddha has also Buddha Bhashita Abhidharma in Kashmir, but apparently he did not say the same thing, you know, because the Abhidharma is not the same. So there is some strange thing, yes? People who know Theravada Abhidharma, that's what he said in heaven to his mother. And then the Kashmir people, Sarvastivada, say that's what he said in heaven to his mother. But he did not say the same thing. So there must be, have some questions, raising some questions. He probably never went to heaven to talk to his mother. Personally, I don't believe it. I think he just spoke the sutras and the dharmas and the agamas and the kayas, whatever you call it, and some, and Kashyapa made summary of Matakas in Rajaka, as I said. Yeah. And after that, teachers were using those Matakas to teach about the dharma and to teach us what to do to become smarter, better, to become arhat or whatever you may call it. That is true. That is what really happened, I think. But of course he had to say it in heaven, because everybody knew he did not say it on earth. There is no, the disciples knew he was always there. When he left Shariputra, when he went to heaven, Shariputra was there, and some disciples, they say they were very anxiety, they were afraid. What if he doesn't come back? Mm-hmm. What if something happens to him? And so when he came back, they wanted to make an image. They say, so if he leaves the next time, we have an image. Mm-hmm. So this is the beginning of the oldest image in Kaushambi. Yeah. Huh? This is the oldest, that what they say. But is this true or not? I don't know. We don't have any image so old. So, and if they make an image during the life of the Buddha, how come the oldest image of a Buddha is 1st century BC and 1st century AD? Why for hundreds of years no more image?
No, teacher, I heard that one of the Dhamma masters in Bangladesh told me that during that time, while Buddha was absent in the earth, yes, he was in the heaven.
Yes.
So probably the disciples make a statue of the Buddha, image,
yes,
of the Buddha.
Yes. In Kaushambi.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
When the Buddha returned from the heaven,
yes,
it's automatically, how to say, burned into ashes. Because absent, when Buddha was alive, there are no images or others.
No. But maybe there was no image to begin with.
I don't know.
It didn't have to burn anything, actually.
It says it's that, yeah.
Yeah, but it's true. That's how they explain the first image of the Buddha, though. So, especially Shariputra.
Yeah.
Shariputra is he knows everything for the Stavilas, not only Abhidharma, but he's the greatest artist. He's an artist for painters and sculptures. It's Shariputra is the wisest one also for them. And Shariputra was very much afraid that something would happen to the Buddha, or he would not come back from heaven. Maybe he was just in the next village or something like that. Why would he be in heaven? It could just be, well, something like, leave me alone. I want to meditate in peace or something like that. Maybe it should not be in heaven necessarily. Anyway, that's how it, the tradition starts. But then how so many hundreds of years and no more image, and then only in Gandhara and Mathura it begins again. Gandhara, Mathura, it begins again. In Gandhara, they say, because of the Greeks, they had gods and images. And if you look at the Gandhara image of the Buddha, he has Greek hair, long hair, and Greek nose. If you look at image in Mathura, he looks like Indian king. No, with a short, those typical Buddha hair. He looks like an Indian Mahapurusha, like an Indian high person. So this, they probably made an image seeing the people there at the time. And he was someone like that. But we don't know what he looked like. Even his 32 Lakshanas, people are still discussing what they really mean, you know. Especially, you know, his fingers were linked. Mm. What does it mean, really? So, what do the 32, the 32 Lakshanas of a Mahapurusha, what does it really mean in reality? It's people are discussing 32 Lakshanas. So it's good, because that's when people do that, they do not do anything bad, right? It's good. Being interested in that is already meritorious, is already bring already guna, not guna, punya. It's good for your next birth. It's yes, I'm sure it is. Anyway, the two traditions, let me come back to Mahasangika Savitarvada. Savitarvada, as I say, is a Sanskrit translation of Theravada. It does not occur in Sanskrit texts. It is a word which is a Sanskrit translation of Theravada, Savitarvada. But the Sri Lankan Theras, they thought they were the real Saviras, you know. So Theravada is them. But there were other Saviras, which you could call Theravada in Pali, many schools. So this is what is written on top of the page in Pataliputra. Pataliputra, oh, there are other names for Pataliputra. And then the two main families, Mahasangik and Savitarvada. As I said, Savitarvada is a Sanskrit translation of Theravada. But Theravada can mean Savitarvada in general. So first the Mahasangikas. We do not know much about Mahasangikas. We know a few things. And Mahasangika studies, we only have very few, especially in an Indian language, we almost have nothing, really. We have Mahavastu, which is Lokottaravada Mahasangika. We have some Vinaya fragments, Mahasangika Vinaya, we have that. We have some texts, but sometimes we don't even know if it is Mahasangika or not. We have not much information. We have more Chinese material. Right now, we know that Prajnaparamita is Mahasangika literature. The Prajnaparamita literature started in Mahasangika, Sangha. So the Prajnaparamita is Mahasangika. And we also know that Prajnaparamita uses the word Mahayana for the first time, especially in the Ashtasahasrika. Ashtasahasrika is the oldest Prajnaparamita text. You heard about Ashtasahasrika? No?
8,000.
Well, now you just heard about it. This is Ashta means 8. Means thousand. Sahasrika, Prajna Paramita Sutra. Actually, should you write it in one word or two words or three words?
One word.
Well, actually, if you write it in Indian language, it's one word.
Yeah.
If you transcribe it, so the oldest. This is the oldest Pratinya Paramita text about Pratinya Paramita. In English, it means perfection of wisdom. Paramita is perfection. Parami. Maybe we should say parami for the early period and paramita for the 7th century and later. But whatever, let's say pratinya paramita. In eta, this is the length of the text. Yes. So if the text, this is a text about pratinya paramita, 8,000 gathas long. So this is the length of the text. It does not say anything about the contents or so on. The contents is Prajna Paramita, but the length. And later you have, this is the oldest one. And this, we know that this text started 1st century BC. Especially chapter 1 and maybe even chapter 2. The oldest part of Ashtasahasrika Prajna Paramita is chapter 1, certainly chapter 1. Maybe also chapter 2. Other chapters came later. So the text grew, became bigger and bigger. But the oldest part is 1st century BC. This is the oldest one. And later texts have more than 8,000, 25,000, even more than that. And they also have summaries, like the Heart, which is the shortest one. So you have bigger ones and you have summaries, but this is the oldest one. And in this text you find the word Mahayana for the first time. So Mahasanghikas say Mahayana about their own, about themselves. This is a... So we know that. We still know a few more things about them, but not much. Let us see the what is mentioned here is what you usually find in encyclopedias and all that. Three main groups of Mahasanghikas. The first group is Ekavyavaharika, which is Lokottarabada. That's the same thing. Ekavyavaharika mean they summarize the whole teaching in one word, one sound. Ekavyavaharika. I think you can summarize the whole teaching, the whole Dharma, in just one sound.
What is that?
Ekavyavaharika. That's what they believe. So, and they became Lokottarabada. I believe they are the same people. Lokottarabada means you. Buddha is Loka Uttara, is higher than the world. You do not limit Shakyamuni to this world and to this one existence. Shakyamuni, the Buddha, was in the 10 directions always. And of these Lokottara, higher than the world, you do not limit Shakyamuni to this world. He is Lokottara. So I believe this Ekavyavaharika people, that's the oldest name, they say they summarize the whole teaching in one syllable, one Lokottara syllable, one Lokottara sound to explain the whole Dharma. And they became called Lokottaravada later, but they are the same people. You see, so this is one. And they were very numerous in the northwest, in Gandharan area, but also in the north of India, but not in the south. So their presence was mainly in the north of India, especially in the northwest, Lokottaravada people. Mahavastu belongs to them. Then they were also in Patna. You know that their Vinaya was found in Patna, Patna has a... Patna, there are many Sanskrit manuscripts in Patna today, still preserved in Patna, and some catalogs, but I remember when I was there, I saw some manuscript, they showed me some manuscript in shoe boxes. I was very surprised, because where I come from, such a precious text, they keep it behind glass and they see that the temperature is not too high and not the liquidity is not too much water, so that they preserve this precious thing and all that, so that in museum, and they do not show it to everybody because the light might damage this and things like that, you know, so they make microfilm of it, and with that you can read, but the manuscript itself. But there I saw it just put in shoebox. So they probably will lose many things, and they don't. The reason is, I understand, you should not say they are careless, because when you are, the first thing is you have to live, eat.
Yeah.
Yes? When you can eat enough, when you can live, then you can move on to the next stage and have some intellectual life.
Yeah.
Yes? But if the first thing is stay alive, and if that does not work, the rest is not. The rest is not important, you know. An old Buddhist manuscript, thousands of years ago. If you cannot live, you can, if you don't have anything to eat, you don't care about those things. So the first thing is you have to live. You have to have some kind of material situation, and then you can be a philosopher, and then you can develop the mind and all that. But if the stomach is not developed, how can you develop the mind? You know? It is quite normal. So that to have it, and they have to take care of living first before taking care of their manuscripts. But when there are others who can help them, help is welcome, of course. This is so Lokottaravada. They have the Lokottaravada Vinaya. Found them in Patna. Actually, in Patna they also found many Abhidharma texts over there. And in Patna they have many Tantra texts. Patna is the capital of Bihar, and Nalanda is not very far. So they have also many Tantras, Tantrayana texts in Patna. So they have many more. I'm confident in the world there are two places where you have still many manuscripts which we do not know about. So in the future we will find many more new things. One place is Patna, and the other place is Lhasa.
In Tibet.
In Tibet. They have many manuscripts there. They found Vimalakirti in Nirdesha. Vimalakirti, original Sanskrit text of Vimalakirti, was found in Lhasa. So for many years we thought was lost. Do not have Sanskrit anymore. But one day they found it in Lhasa. Now it's all back in Lhasa. It used to be in Lhasa, and then it was taken to Beijing. But Beijing all gave it back to Lhasa. So it's now again there. So there are many things. So I'm sure in the future they will come up with more texts. They found Abhidharma Kosha Bhashya in Patna, no? And other Abhidharma texts. They found them in Patna, and they will find many more things. So the future is still okay. I don't think they will ever find Mahaprajna Paramitopadesha, because this was the teaching, spoken teaching of Kumarajiva, and his Chinese students made the text, wrote down, but there was no text to begin with, you know, it was just his teaching. So one can never find a manuscript there. Of course, of some parts of this Mahaprajna Paramitopadesha, there is a text, because Kumarajiva recited by heart some parts of texts, some parts of sutras, and those sutras you can find in the Tripitaka. So it looks like some parts are real translation, but it is Kumarajiva who was teaching, and in his teaching he used quotations, parts of sutras, and we find those sutras in the Tripitaka, so it looks like a real translation of some text. but it's only Kumarajiva reciting. The whole thing is oral teaching. So this Ekavyavaharika, Lokottaravara, that's one group, important in the north, we know that. Another group is called, we know it under different names. It's called Kukuttika, Gokullika, whatever you find. It is probably connected with the Kukutta Rama in Patna. The Kukutta Rama, there was a temple. The Kukutta Rama also used in Ashoka's time. In Ashoka's time, they called it Ashoka Rama, Ashoka's temple. And it became Kukutta Rama, Gokulika Rama. It was a Prakrit word originally. So we have different Sanskrit terms for it. We do not know exactly what the real original first name was, because that was Prakrit, and different. We have different Sanskrit. So I gave you two. The Kukuttikas, we know it's the Kukutta Rama, it was called like that later. Ashoka Rama became Kukutta Rama. But some people call it Gokulika and whatever. And because of those different words, you find very strange stories. Kukutta Rama with a chicken.
Chicken.
Yeah. And Gokulika has to do with ox. Things like that. So based on those different names, you find different stories, which are very nice to hear, you know? I like stories. But that does not mean it's true. So this Ashoka Rama, this Kukutta Rama. So this important temple in Patna, there were monks there, and they belonged to the Mahasanghika group. And they later split up in two groups, the Bahushrutiyas and the Pratyaptivaras. The Bahushruta, you are Theravada monk, so you know that Bahushruta is a very Theravada word. It's a learned monk, is a Bahushruta. So it is a very Saviravada kind of term. It makes you think immediately of Saviras, Bahushrutiya and Bahushruta. The Bahushrutiyas, they have a reputation of being Mahasanghika, yes, but they thought that the Saviras also had very good ideas. They are so middle between the Mahasanghikas who want to be Buddha, who want to say that everything is empty, Pratyaparamita is center and all that. They also believed that the Saviras had some good Shastras. They had Stavira Shastras also. So the Bahushrutiyas have some middle way. So originally you had the monks in the Kukutta Rama in Patna. But then some people started saying, well, Staviras also have good ideas. And so there was a split. But the ones who remained, who did not change their mind, they were called Prajñaptivara. And Prajñaptivara, they very soon went to South India. In Andhra Pradesh you have them. The Prajñaptivadas are very numerous in South India. In Andhra Pradesh, Prajñapti. Prajñapti, the meaning of Prajñaptivada, Prajñapti, the translation is a false appellation. So when you speak, you use words and terms. But those terms are just convention. Those words are not the reality. You should not think the words are the reality, but the words are just used to talk, to communicate, but the words themselves are not the reality. So that's Prajñapti. It teaches you something, words, because we have to talk, right? So we have to use words and meaning of words, but this is convention. The reality is not that what we use, the meaning of what we use. Reality is emptiness and things like that. This is what the Prajñaptivara people, this is what called Prajñaptivara. So they are very strong in South India. Very strong in South India. Bahushrutiyas, you find them in Patna, but you also find them. You find them in Madhya Pradesh and in Bihar, but you also find them in the south, in Andhra Pradesh. You also find Bahushrutiyas. You even find Bahushrutiyas in the Gandharan area. So Bahushrutiyas were all over, not in Sri Lanka. No, never to Sri Lanka. But you find they went as far as Andhra. We have temples belonging to Bahushrutiya. It says so on the wall. So we have them in Andhra, we have them in Madhya Desha, in Bihar. We also have them in the Gandharan area. So they were spread out quite widely. That's the second group. Then the third group is only in the south. But they may have started in Patna too. They call them Chaitikas or Chaityas. Chaitikas, they have their name because they are very famous for their Chaitas, their temples. Their worship temples and Chaityas, that they're very much known for that. They are Mahasanghikas. They may have started also in Patna, but they very soon left and went to the south. And the Chaitikas are in the south, in Andhra. And in the south, they're split up in different kinds of people. In the Purva Shailas, Apara Shailas. Purva means east, yes?
Yeah.
Or in front. Purva means east, but also in front of you, yes? So the Purva Shailas were the people who were living on the eastern mountains, east of Amaravati, east of Dhanyakataka, the mountains to the east. And the Apara Shailas, Apara is the west. So the Apara Shailas people, they are the same school, same people, but they were living in the western mountains of Amaravati, of Dhanyakataka. But they were both Chaitikas. And in the splitting up of those Chaitikas in the south, in Andhra, here Mahadeva may have played a role. Mahadeva comes in this splitting up of the Mahasanghikas in the south, in Andhra. You have more in the south. You have Rajagirikas and Siddharthikas, but we know very little about them. We only know them because Buddha Ghosa talks about them. Buddha Ghosa knows all those Andhaka sects, as it's called in the group. People in Andhra. Buddha Ghosa knows the situation in Andhra very well. He mentions those schools. He mentions the Rajagirikas, he mentions the Siddharthikas. He knows them all, which is an element which makes us say that he may come from there. That's why he knows it so well. That's the third main group. The Lokottaravara. We know relatively most about Lokottaravara people. So that's the Mahasanghika, and we also have Chinese translations of Mahasanghika literature. As I said, the one good clue is if Shariputra asks all the questions in your text, you can be sure it's not a Stavira text. If Shariputra knows all the answers, you can be sure it's a Stavira text. No? this is very simple criteria. No? For the Mahasanghika texts, Shariputra has to ask the question. The text which I mentioned to you, where the first Sangha Veda is explained, it exists only in Chinese translation of the 5th century, but if I translate the title, it means Shariputra Paripurcha, the questions of Shariputra. Shariputra Paripurcha means questions of Shariputra. That is the title of this Chinese text explaining the Sangha Veda between Savitas and Mahasanghikas. and it belongs to them. So if Shariputra asks the questions, Shariputra Parpracha, it is not Stavira Varatais. You can immediately say so. This. And then there is the second, the Staviravara thing.
It's great.
But maybe we have a break.
Yeah.
Because it's a long chapter.
Yeah.